Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. The age of heroes has dawned and the quest for optimal wellness continues. Today on Herculean Physique, I'm honored to be speaking to Greg Morse, and our topic will be MACE training. Greetings and welcome, Greg. How are you?
Well, everyone, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic. I want to thank you for introducing me to the other people in the MACE training community.
Absolutely. I love when anytime someone's doing something to promote fitness, wellness, training of any type, I'm a big fan of it.
So how did you get involved in MACE training?
About 14, 15 years ago, I got into a cycling accident and I dislocated my shoulder and tore my AC joint. And I didn't have health insurance at the time. I was a young trainer. And I couldn't really afford to go to the doctor and get it fixed. So I just kind of left it the way it was and didn't use my arm very much. And then eventually I went to a Rossi and got it fixed. But it was never quite right. Every time I tried to do your traditional work after bench pressing and stuff like that, I would get shoulder problems. That was just last week. And so one day I just kind of got a little frustrated and started doing the little Google search, and in that, looking for shoulder health, I discovered that it's still MACE. And I had a gym in Austin at the time that was called Morse Performance Systems, and I did speed and agility sports performance training. And so me and my buddy, Jonathan, he's one of the guys I recommended to you,
uh-huh.
We picked up a couple maces and started swinging it. And we're like, okay, this is really cool. So then we had Mr. Maceman come down to our gym, him and Eric Doyle, and they taught one of their Mace certifications at my gym, and that's my first really big introduction to it besides just kind of goofing off with it before that, and just kind of fell in love with the Mace and the clubs and just the unconventional training.
Wow. What a tale. And how about the road that brought you to the gym and to fitness in the first place? It sounds like that's been a passion of yours your entire life.
Yes. Well, not really. In a way, yes. In a way, no. It's always been a fascination. Like, I played sports when I was real young. Then I stopped for a while. Then I got back into sports in middle school, played through high school. And then in college, I just kind of partied and didn't work out or do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then at about 27, 28 years old, I kind of got tired of partying so much and was like, I want to get fit. I was really kind of heavy. I was overweight. I was close to 300 pounds. I didn't feel well. And so I just picked up first it was a Flex magazine, actually, and I signed up at the closest gym to my house, and then I just started working out trying to lose weight, and then it just kind of went from there. And then I was working, I lost a whole bunch of weight, and then 24 Hour Fitness offered me a job because the manager saw me lose all this weight, and that's when I got into training right there, becoming a trainer. But since then, I've been incredibly passionate about fitness. Many years ago, I was working at a gym. I left fitness for a bit, and I went into banking, and then I got out of banking and just got a part-time job at the local gym again. Looking for something to do until I figured out what I wanted to do when I was finished growing up. And they had this little speed and agility program called the Parisi Speed School. And I would watch that with such fascination, and they saw that and they offered me a job doing that. And that's how I really fell in love with fitness, was training kids.
Wow. And you still have your gym?
No, we moved out of Austin. We got shut down during COVID, and we knew we were leaving Austin, so I never reopened it. And right now, I just haven't reopened it quite yet. I'm just kind of more of a full-time dad at the moment.
I've seen pictures on your Facebook page. Those are
yes,
your kids?
Sir. Oh, yeah. I love being a dad right now, and I feel very, very blessed that I get to sit there and put so much of my attention and efforts into my kids.
It's a great feeling. I'm a granddad now for the past year. So,
oh, congratulations.
I get to experience a whole new generation of little kids.
Yes.
So right now you're a full-time dad. What type of aspirations do you have for the future?
Well, I work with my daughter's soccer team, and then I work with another team in my daughter's soccer club for speed and agility. I've been kind of dealing with a lot of rheumatoid arthritis and autoimmune. I have autoimmune disorder. I've been
hit
hard by that. I appreciate that. It's, you know, the way I see it is, it's life is what it is. You know, whatever you believe, it's how we, you know, your particular body's created. I just feel fortunate that I'm still able to work out. I'm still able to do stuff. I'm still able to live my life and be an active father. It just hurts sometimes, whereas there's people out there who might have perfectly healthy bodies but struggle in other emotional areas that can't enjoy life the way I get to enjoy it. So, I mean, you know, everyone has a struggle somewhere, and I think mine's not that bad compared to some people.
And that's a phenomenally healthy way of looking at it, because it's true. Everybody has their cross to bear or their challenges to meet, any way you want to phrase it. And many people get caught in their own, and they don't enjoy the life that they're able to enjoy. So it's great that you've learned that life lesson and that you're living it.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, with the autoimmune disease, I've experienced some painful moments in my life where it was really emotionally crushing and frustrating. And, you know, being blessed with a very wonderful wife, and, you know, I have a healthy relationship with God, it's kind of helped see me through some of those harder times and help keep me have a better perspective. Because for me, the most important thing I can do right now is be there for my family. You know, in the past, I was there for the kids I trained also, but I want to be there for the people I'm supposed to be there for.
That is very admirable. And now, I guess you're not competing now, but did you get into the MACE competitions as well as the training?
I didn't do the competitions as much. My buddy Johnny, we hosted one at our gym a while back in Austin a couple years ago. He called it the Texas MACE Shootout. At the time, I really wasn't as much into the competition MACE, stuff like that. I just really wasn't feeling competing at the time, I guess you could say. But I know a couple people that do compete quite frequently. It's just myself, it's just not something I chose to do.
Now, you introduced me to Puerco, and Puerco was on a few days ago. He seems like a very colorful character and a really interesting person.
He's a really good guy. I mean, he's definitely someone worth talking to and worth knowing. He's really a fun guy to talk to, and he's a good guy.
Yeah,
he's also one heck of a MACE competitor.
Yes, and he's also like a Renaissance man of sorts. He does art, he does barbecue cooking, he does all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Do you have any hobbies?
I really enjoy my workout still. That's kind of one of the highlights of my day. I really enjoy gardening. I'm kind of turning my backyard into a permaculture food forest.
Oh,
gardening's
wow.
Probably one of my I love gardening.
My wife loves gardening too. She's out there any minute she can spare. She's out there in her garden, and we were blessed with lots of fresh vegetables for the past few months.
Isn't that the best though? I mean, I really enjoy the flowers for you to look at them, and the bees and watching the butterflies. I just watching the nature come by, you get the food out of it. I mean, all that stuff, just the whole, I love having my kids involved and seeing where food actually comes from.
What type of things do you grow?
In a food forest, you kind of try to replicate what a forest grows like. And so you have seven layers. The upper layer is your canopy. So I have two pecan trees, an elm tree, but I've also planted moringa trees, plum trees, lemon trees, lime trees, papaya. Then you go for your sub canopy, which is like berries and bushes. And then you go on down to more of your ground cover, then your roots and your tubers and your vines. And so like right now, I'm only about a year into my project. And I have tons of like fruit trees. Like I have pomegranate, lemon lime, I have some fig trees, I said my pecan trees, plum tree. And then I have a lot of like berry bushes. I have honey berries and blackberries, blueberries, raspberries, gooseberries, currants. I have lots of vegetables as well. Yeah, I grew a lot of tomatoes and peppers this year. I try to grow lots of like medicinals. I'm very big into that. So I have like bee balm, you know, bergamot, agastache. I have chamomile, lemongrass, lemon balm, because all this stuff is so medicinal.
So are you making a business out of this, or this is just to sustain your household or your community?
This is really just to sustain my household, and I share with my neighbors also. I mean, it's just because, like, in my heart, I believe that, like, I grow a very self-sustainable way. So, like, I've hauled in 60 cubic yards of wood chips from my driveway to my backyard to help improve the soil. You try to do it in the most efficient way possible. So I built a drip irrigation system to conserve water. Everything is heavily mulched with the wood chips. And you try to just, you know, bring back more nature and try to heal the soil you have. And then everything else should grow on its own. And I really focus on perennial plants that come back year after year. So as each year passes by, it becomes more and more bountiful, but also more self-sustainable.
Oh, that sounds awesome. That is incredible. I'm getting into gardening now that my wife has been into it. And again, the food, you can't compare it to what you buy in the store. It's so delicious and so many different unique flavors. If you have a salad, it's an amazing experience. If you get everything from the store, it tastes a bit cardboardy or bland. But if you grow your own food, it's like, oh, incredibly delicious.
And when you pick it and you eat it fresh, it provides so much more to you nutrition-wise, I believe.
So you believe in nutrition through food, or do you also take any supplements?
I am not a big supplement guy. I do take my protein, because I just want to increase my protein consumption a little bit more. But really, supplement-wise, all I use is I take a fish oil, a multivitamin, and some joint complex to keep the old joints from being so creaky, especially because of the arthritis. And then I take like turmeric. Other than that, I really don't do a lot of supplement stuff. I really try to keep it, you know, mostly food.
And in terms of the medicinal herbs, like you mentioned, chamomile, do you follow any, like, are they home remedies, or do you follow like Culpepper's Herbal, or do you have any source that you follow?
I'm a big research guy. So what I've done is I've researched everything what plants I add. I research their medicinal benefits. And for example, like, I know that the lemon balm is incredible for anxiety. Lemongrass is good for respiratory, and like chamomile is good for anxiety as well, as helping you rest better at night. And so I tend to like mix those things together to make teas. And I kind of tend to just do like, I learned what they're good for, and then I just kind of implement whatever I believe is good for the time. I haven't got into yet following someone else's recipes yet.
Okay. I'm Greek, and to Greeks, chamomile is a panacea. It supposedly cures almost everything. When I was little, if I had any type of ailment, it would be chamomile that I was given first. Then if that didn't work, it was mountain sage. They call that pascomili in Greek. If that didn't work, there were the cups. They take cups and they put like a piece of alcohol in the cup and set it on fire. And then they put that on your skin. And it's supposed to suck out all the ill humors, you know, the vapors or whatever they believe. That when I was sick as a kid, unless I was very sick and I went to a doctor, those are the remedies. It was chamomile, mountain sage, and the cups.
Yeah, for me, because of my autoimmune disease, I drink the chamomile tea, the chamomile lemongrass, lemon balm tea almost every single night, because it's anti-inflammatory and it's healing to the body. Now the cups, I actually I used to use the cups on a lot of my athletes. Because what happens is, you know, as athletes train, when you get, you know, strained soft tissues, usually you kind of get adhesions up and down the fascia, and it causes the body to move different. It causes sometimes pain or something like that in the movement. And to keep athletes having full ranges of motion, I got certified in instrument-assisted therapy, like the muscle scraping and the muscle cupping, as well as the muscle flossing. And I would do a lot of maintenance on my athletes on an almost daily basis sometimes, because when they come after, you know, like the college athletes, the guys that play pro overseas, when they come in after their season, they're usually pretty beat up and, you know, somewhat injured. And before you can really start training them, you kind of have to, I always felt that it was better to deal with those issues first and get their tissues healthy before you start really loading it up and stressing it out again. And so
wow.
I use those quite a bit back in the days.
So your interest in fitness is very deep and very profound. It's not just a surface interest. You're really well trained, well versed, and you apply everything that you learn. That is awesome.
I really try to. I mean, I absolutely love fitness. It's always been such an important part for me. There was a point where I was younger, before I met my wife, where, I mean, like, you know, we have these little tough time bouts in life that are challenging, but there was a point where the fitness, me training those kids, was the best thing in my life at the time. And something like that was so profound to me and so valuable that I just never let it go. And I've always felt that as a professional in the fitness industry, it's my duty to sit there and continue to train, to continue to learn deeper about it, to learn more about it, you know, because there's so many different aspects. And, you know, you can truly master one aspect, and I think that's wonderful, and it's great that people do. But, you know, if you can sit there and get a very thorough understanding of multiple aspects, I feel like you can overall have a greater impact.
Very, very true. You mentioned your spiritual dimension, and that's something that a lot of people don't talk about. But I found in my life and with people I've worked with that whatever their spiritual beliefs, if they have them and they apply them to fitness, let's say, it really deepens the experience and it adds dimensions that might not be there on the surface. Is that something that you found in being a spiritual person and also being a fitness instructor?
Well, I do believe that, yes. I think that the spiritual aspect is really an important part of being complete in your fitness journey and stuff like that. Because I think, and I don't think you have to be any one particular spiritual thing. I think it's just important to have some type of belief, something that you believe in. I've never wanted to be the one to force. Yeah, I don't want to force my beliefs on somebody else.
Right.
But I do want people to have something that helps guide them.
Yeah, I'm of the same mind. You know, my spirituality is mythic. It's Olympian, but I don't expect other people to follow that path. But I've noticed that I get along very well with people who follow most spiritual paths if they're, you know, following them, because we have a lot in common, and a lot of the practices like meditation and prayer are the same. So it adds a whole different level to the conversation. And working in human services for many years, as I did, I found that most people in the human services, too, even if they didn't belong to any particular religion, if they had a spirituality, it added great meaning and purpose to what they were doing. So it added a whole different dimension that wasn't there for many people.
Mm-hmm. I have a friend, actually, that's completely atheist when it comes to religion, but he lives his life like an absolute Christian. Because all he believes in is the earth, energy, and karma.
That's enough, really.
Yeah, that's more than enough.
Yeah, it gives your life meaning and puts everything in context, and life becomes a richer experience in very many ways.
Absolutely. You know, and the drive, like, to me, I think, like, in my belief, is one of the most important things you can do, and this is actually what guided me to fitness, is to be a positive imprint on someone else's life, right?
Mm-hmm.
Before I got into fitness, I was a personal banker in private wealth management at Wells Fargo Bank. And my job was to make money move. It was not to make people money. It was to make the bank money, but my clients, I had to keep their money moving. Otherwise, I didn't make money and the bank didn't make money. And I hated that because people would lose money. They would come in angry at me. And I just, in my heart, what I was doing did not sit right with me. And so when I left Wells Fargo Bank and got in, you know, back into the fitness thing, you know, every single interaction with someone is a positive one. Like with me training kids, my goal is to help mentor them and guide them to be better people which automatically makes you a better athlete. You know, like you, I always tell people that, you know, in fitness, physiological changes happen by simply doing the work. You can yell at someone and push them as hard as you can push them, as hard as they can be pushed, and they will get physically stronger until they break, of course. But what I've learned is, and I learned this very early on, this is the one thing that made me a good coach for young kids, is that my job really was to help teach kids to believe in themselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can take someone, if there's a task that you know they can complete, if you can convince them it's impossible, they're not going to complete the task because it's impossible in their mind, and they will stop short because they believe it. If you convince someone that cannot do a task, that it's more than possible and they're completely capable of it, what's going to happen is they're going to step out beyond themselves, and they might not complete the task, but they're going to get so much further than they thought they could get, and that's empowering to them. And I've always felt that if you can help a kid believe in himself in the sports world, it's going to translate to he's going to be a better son to his parents, a better sibling to his brothers and sisters, a better student in school, and a better person in society. The belief and the love for yourself makes you a better person. But not everyone has that. Not every kid has victories and wins all the time. And some kids have been knocked down. And so when I realized that my job was to empower these kids to believe in themselves and let the physiological part take care of itself, I finally became a good coach.
Those are wise words. I realize the same thing when I work with people. I try to encourage people and empower people. There's too many things knocking people down, too many things giving them negative feedback or discouraging them. And people believe these things, especially if they're repeated mm-hmm. often enough by people that they consider authorities or that have some sort of influence over them. So it's a slow and steady process. But if people feel good about themselves, if they feel encouraged, they do tend to do much better, and they do tend to become better people.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The very one kid that helped me understand this is he came in and he played soccer, and his best friend's dad was the coach. And one day the dad said, "I wish so-and-so wasn't on our team." So the best friend goes back and tells him, "My dad said he wishes you weren't on our team." And the kid was crushed. His grades dropped, his self-esteem dropped. You could see that in his face. And I didn't understand this yet. And the kid was built like a hobbit, so soccer definitely wasn't his sport, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're having people do push-ups, and I realized he might be moving 2 inches, but he's doing perfect push-ups. And I complimented him on that, and he started pushing better and better and better. And then I was watching, and then I realized, I just inspired this kid. Like, this might have been his first victory ever when it comes to physicality. And it felt good to him, and I could feel it off of him, like I could see it. And so I started pushing on like that on kids. I started saying, I can help all these kids get a victory. And I did that, and it worked. And then I kept doing it, and then they would get better and better and better. There's a book I read many years ago. I cannot remember. It was written by the UCLA coach that won like a million championships, John Wooten, I think his name was, or something.
Okay. Wooten. I'm not sure. I need to look it up.
Okay. But basically, in his book, he said that he didn't teach young men to play basketball. He taught young men to be better men. And when you're a better person, you just happen to be a better basketball player and you win championships.
Yes, John Wooden is the coach. You're right about the name.
Yep. Okay, John Wooden, yeah. But it was years ago I read this book, and that was around the same time I discovered it with this kid, and that completely guided my whole future in training youth athletes and just training in general. I mean, everyone needs it. You know, there's men out there who are beaten up right now. There's women out there who need a victory also. And sometimes as a trainer, all you got to do is just help them get that first victory.
Very, very true. In whatever sphere of competition they need it in. But yes, it's very important. And it does translate because you'll see a change in people if you encourage them.
Yes. Well, they'll work harder for you because you actually believe in them and they know it.
So you should be a motivational speaker. You give very motivational talks.
I've been told that before. Thank you.
It's the universe talking to you.
It might be time. I mean, I really do enjoy inspiring people, though. I mean, it's something that, you know, it's, like I said, I believe in leaving a positive mark on people. When, you know, whenever someone interacts with me, I want them to walk away saying, wow, you know, like, that was cool.
And that's something that your friend Perko shares also. And I had another guest yesterday, Richard Hamilton Gibbs, who wrote Mount Olympus Lifestyle, which is about the keto diet primarily. But he's been doing a lot of recent work on longevity and anti-aging. So he shared some of that. But both of them said the same thing, you know, about the importance of motivating people, the importance of meeting the challenges that life gives you and with very pleasant attitude. Like Perko shared that he has a visual impairment that would have prevented many people from starting businesses and competing in MACE competitions and so forth. But he just took it in stride and, you know, it didn't hold him back.
Yeah, no. He's a, I don't know if you've seen him compete. He is a beast with that mace in his hand.
Yeah, I've seen some videos on, I believe, YouTube, and he gave me a link to one of the other social media platforms that I'm not on, but I was able to watch the video. I think TikTok or something.
Yeah.
So I'm just starting off with the mace. What got me interested in the mace is I had Rick on the show a while back, and mm-hmm. I was fascinated with what he was saying, and I read his books online. They're free for anybody who wants them. They're online for free. And then recently I started just basically looking into the mythology of the mace. From antiquity to the present time. And I saw that it had a lot of rich mythological connections to Hercules and to Thor and to Balarama and to a lot of the more Herculean type of figures. And I was mm-hmm. already familiar with the Club of Hercules and how that eventually became the Hammer of Thor when it traveled north along the, like, different trade routes and so forth. So I had some background, but the mace added a lot of missing information. So I became interested in the mace, not only for physical fitness, but also for its spiritual connotations. So I created the group on Facebook, and then something happened to my Facebook account. So I was off it for a very long time. I was able to recover it, and I came back. So I went back and I reactivated the group after a while. But I found that all the people in the community that I've interacted with are great people. You know, they're very helpful. They're very friendly. They're very connected with one another, very supportive of one another. I'm glad that I'm having this conversation with you.
Absolutely. I'm glad we got to come on. When I first saw you make the post, I posted the other guys, and I'm like, I would love to go and talk to them also.
Well, you're definitely an excellent guest. I mean, you're so inspiring, and you too, like a Perko, you know, life hands you lemons, you make lemonade right away, and healthy lemonade to boot.
You got to do something with it.
That's very, very true. My challenge right now is diabetes, type 2. And I'm in my 60s, so that's something that's been very challenging. I beat it once, and I was off the medication. My blood sugar was fine. And then years passed, and I guess I slid into some bad habits again. So lately I've been fighting back and trying to get that blood sugar back into manageable ranges. I'm finally in the high normal range. So that's good. So it's just from now on, it's just a bunch of fine-tuning. Has a lot of supplemental things like peripheral neuropathy. So I have like peripheral neuropathy in my fingers and in my toes, and that upsets my balance a bit. So I have to do balance exercises every day so that I don't get unbalanced. But like you said, we all have our thing, and everybody's is different. And you could either let it defeat you, or you can just say, well, this is what I got to deal with, and deal with it and move on and enjoy your life.
Absolutely. I have a very personal vendetta against diabetes. I lost my mother to diabetes during the pandemic, and like,
oh,
she was,
sorry.
I appreciate it. She was a diabetic since I was in third grade. And so you know, after my father passed, you know, he asked me, he said, make sure you look out for your mother. And so I started really digging in and learning about diabetes. And so I could help her manage it because she wasn't very good at managing it. And then at one point I moved her in with me and my wife because I just felt that she was 2 years away from death because her diabetes was just so out of control. And we got the doctor, but within about 3 months, the doctor cut her insulin usage in half because we just had her diet doing so well. But then during the pandemic, everything was kind of haywire, and she wasn't able to get to her weekly doctor visits like she was used to, and stuff just kind of got out of hand, and she didn't wake up one morning.
I'm sorry to hear that. I know it's tough for diabetics for the pandemic, and I have to be extra careful because your immune system's compromised. So, you know, you need to be very, very careful.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, her thing is the doctors, when the pandemic started, they put her on an insulin pump because they told her it would be better. It would help her manage it easier because she wasn't able to, because she was so used to going to the doctor every week. And the idea was the pump was going to help her manage it. And she put too much faith in the pump and it malfunctioned and she didn't work. And then her blood sugar got up to the 900s and she passed away.
Oh, that's high.
Yeah. But everything happens for a reason.
So it is said.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for someone starting out with the mace, what the suggestions do you have?
Start out lighter than you think you need.
Okay.
I'm a big believer in, you know, with the mace, so much of it, you know, a lot of people that, you know, the motion with the shoulder is, you know, a lot of people lose that and they want to grab a mace and start swinging it. And I always tell people start out a little bit slower and take your time with it, but definitely just start swinging one. You'll get the 10-pounder and start moving that thing around. I really like club bells as well. I'm a big club bell fan.
Okay. What's a club bell?
Pardon?
What's a club bell? I'm not familiar with that one.
It basically imagine like a bowling pin.
Okay.
Of different weights. So it's like, you know how the mace has all the weight at the tip on the ball? And so
yes.
You get all the resistance from that leverage. The club bell has, you use it the same as a mace, but the weight distribution is a little bit different, right? So, for example, when you're doing a 360 and you get it to behind your, and once you get it over the shoulder by the ear, as it gets behind you and starts that little swing, at least for me, I kind of let go and let momentum take control. And you time it to where you catch it by the other shoulder and you pull it over back down towards your belly button, right? So
okay.
The mace is a lot more about gracefulness and about timing. Whereas the club bells, to me, is since it's not quite as long, but it still has the leverage, you know, advantage, disadvantage, whatever you want to call it. As you get over the shoulder, you have to kind of control it more. So the club bell, to me, takes a little bit more strength control, whereas the mace is a little bit more grace and timing.
I like using a variety of, like right now I'm doing dumbbells mostly, but I also use kettlebells and D-bells, you know, so I like using different type of essentially dumbbells because the different, the way the handles are gives them different weight distribution. So it changes the exercise substantially. So I'm imagining that the mace will be different than the club bells.
Yeah. Have you ever talked to Pavel Wadido from Tingu?
No. If you give me his information, I will contact him.
I'll definitely link one over. He used to do the Art of Functional Movement. He was one of the creators of that. And then they kind of, the two guys broke up and went their own way. But he actually has what in sales, what he calls a bulva, which is basically a shorter mace. And so it's like halfway between a mace and a club bell. And
okay.
It also swings a little bit differently. It's really neat.
Do you mean are Indian clubs club bells, or is that something different?
Indian clubs tend to be 1, 2, or 3 pounds, whereas club bells tend to be 5, 10, 15, 20, 25,
okay,
35, and 45 pounds. And so the Indian clubs is more for your wrist, elbow, shoulder health. The club bell itself, it's more of a whole body workout.
I was thinking of starting with a 10-pound sledgehammer, which is how Puerco started. also. Yep. I've used sledgehammers before, so I'm familiar with them. Try all the different variations. I'm going to try the Indian clubs. I'm going to try the club bells. I'll try different types of maces. He also told me that he's made maces with like a dowel, some screws, and some cement with different type of containers. I'll probably try that one. This is going to be a whole adventure, a whole odyssey. So I'm looking forward to
it. It's really fun. I have my buddy John and I have, we have a bunch of maces. We have the 8X maces from Don. We have the War Club, I think it is, from Paik McNally. We have mace from, you know, off of Amazon, a couple of Amazon maces. We have some of the Onnit maces. We have the Onnit, the quad mace from Onnit. You know, we have a good variety of maces. And what's fun about that is they all swing differently.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when we held the first mace certification at my gym in Austin, it was right around Halloween. And I actually went out and got a couple Halloween pumpkins. And I made those in the little plastic trick-or-treat pumpkins. And I made those into maces.
Yes, Perko shared that story. Was he part of that, or did he do that separately?
He was part of that, actually. He was the first guy that signed up. Yes, sir, he was there. That's where we first met.
Yeah, he was telling me that story, and now he says he got glass containers, too, different types of containers in discount stores, and then he fills them up with the cement, and then later on he'll break the glass, and he'll have, like, a really interestingly shaped mace.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I did that also. Those are fun. In general, now I tend to mostly just use the Onnit maces because we have a whole bunch of those. I like the handles, or I really like the Adex because of the way it swings. Because every mace, based upon the handle thickness and the length and the weight distribution, because they're all going to distribute weight a little bit differently, it's just going to swing a little bit differently. And I'm not going to say any of them are better. They're all fun to swing, and it's all fun to see its unique way of moving.
That adds a whole different dimension to this adventure that I thought about it, but I never really considered how much a part of this adventure that'll be. Thank you for pointing that out to me.
Oh, absolutely. I hope you really enjoyed the adventure. It's a lot of fun. And I maybe find some club bells because they're a lot of fun too.
Yeah, the club bells interest me. I used to saw the handle off the sledgehammers. I had different size sledgehammers. This was when I was exploring Norse mythology mostly because of Thor and his hammer. I used to exercise with sledgehammers, and I cut the handle off to duplicate the Thor's hammer. So each poundage had a different different effect. I was able to use the 25-pounder after a while. And these are short-handled, barely past your hand when you're holding it. And that gave me a really unique workout. So I'm imagining the club bells would do the same.
It really does. My buddy and I right now, we're following there's a TacFit club bell workout they put out. And we do that about 3 days a week, I think it is, where there's a high, medium, and low-intensity workout for the club bells.
Okay.
It's a lot of fun, but it starts off and you basically start off with really basic movement, and then every couple of weeks it increases the complexity of the movement. And so you might start off with like a semi-side swing, but eventually you work into maybe like a two-hand or a single-handed mill.
And what type of diet do you recommend for somebody who does club bells and club bells and maces and Indian clubs? Bodybuilders have a particular type of diet that they follow in terms of the protein they consume and the amount of carbs and fats and cycling and so forth. Is there such a discipline with the mace community as well? Are there optimal type of diets or no?
I haven't really heard a lot of other people really get too much into their diet and how they work on their nutrition. For me, I'm a big believer that based upon our lineage, we all have, like, our bodies have kind of are a little bit different in a way. Like, for example, my wife is from the Dominican Republic, where rice is the biggest staple on their plate or plantain. And she can eat carbs like crazy. If she don't eat carbs, she's going to shrivel away to nothing. Where I am Native American and European, I'm German and Native American. And for me, if I eat rice, I blow up and put a ton of weight on. But I do my best when I just eat meat and vegetables. And so I think that a lot of our heritage and our genetics play a big role in how we should eat. I think ultimately, no matter who you are, there are certain things that always hold true, which is you want to avoid, you know, processed sugars. You want to avoid mostly processed foods and try to eat as natural as possible. With my autoimmune disease, I tend to follow a diet called the autoimmune protocol.
Okay.
But that's a very, very, very specific diet, and it's not meant to be a forever thing. It's kind of a thing where, like, when your body is not healthy, it's meant to get your body to reduce inflammation and increase healing in the body. But not everyone else is like me. And so I think that, you know, my belief is, as long as you're happy where your body's at physically and you're promoting good health, it really is whatever you want to do. If you want to compete more, if you want to perform as an athlete, all of a sudden you definitely have to clean it up some. I'm a big advocate of higher protein diets. I eat a lot of red meat. I eat steak two or three times. Pardon?
Me too.
Oh, good. I eat steak about two or three times a week. We buy our beef, a half a cow at a time. We go to the, to a rancher. We buy a cow and he slaughters it and takes it. You know, we go to the slaughterhouse and pick up the whole back half.
Wow.
You get it so much cheaper that way.
I thought you were being figurative for a second, but no, you were literal.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I got actually, if you look on my Instagram, I'm pretty sure there's a picture of me with the back of my little Subaru Outback completely full of steaks and ground beef and briskets and ribs that I just picked up from the slaughterhouse.
Yeah, I eat a lot of beef, but it's from the supermarket or from the butcher shop, a little bit at a time.
Yeah. The reason we started doing that was because of, about 2 years ago, the price of beef started skyrocketing.
Yes,
and
it did.
I live in Texas. I live in San Antonio, Texas, or outside San Antonio, Texas, in a suburb called Universal City. And I was going to the store, and I'm looking at a ribeye steak. It was being like $20 a pound almost. And I'm like, I like to eat a lot of beef. And so I started looking around, and my wife all of a sudden finds this guy she knows that she works with. He's like, I know this rancher. He sells them it's a really good deal if you buy half a cow, because they sell you the back half, because the front half does not, like, a lot of people don't like to eat that meat as much. It's not as much good stuff in there. And so if you go out and you buy it that way, you're paying about $5 a pound for your steaks, for everything. But you have to buy it all at once. And so we went out and got ourselves a 16 cubic foot deep freeze in the garage. And we go pick up one or two half cows at one time and load that bad boy up. And we go buy beef every 8 months to a year.
I have to wait till we get a new freezer for that. We had a big flood. Our basement was under 3 feet of water. New Jersey.
Okay. Yeah.
So I need to research that now, because $5 a pound, that is excellent.
Yeah. It might be a little bit more expensive where you're at, just because, it's the ranchers, there's not as many ranchers. Where I live, there's a ton of ranchers, but no matter what, if you find a slaughterhouse or a rancher, it will be cheaper than going to the store, because you're cutting out multiple middlemen. Also, the quality of beef is going to be so much better. Yes, by far.
Now, one of the things that Porco said during his interview was that he felt that the sport of mace training, mace competition, needed something to jazz it up. Because even though it's a great sport if you're competing, if you're watching it, it doesn't seem very exciting past the first few minutes. What would you suggest to jazz up the sport of mace training?
I personally think it's pretty interesting because as people get to those upper numbers and you see people start to kind of really suffer and dig deep, I find that personally interesting. I've never thought about jazzing it up more. That's a tough one.
Okay. Yeah, I've been thinking about that because, like, wrestling has its mystique, you know, its vibe, and even the bodybuilding competitions, because there you're basically watching people pose, but they introduce music and different types of poses to create a show. So I was trying to think, you know, and I'm watching more and more tapes on YouTube mostly. But I figured I'd ask everybody who's on the show if what they think about it. Maybe we can do something interesting in the group on Facebook and, you know, play with it there.
When Johnny, my buddy Johnny, when he hosted the Texas May shootout at our gym, what he did was he got a big timer in the front, and then he had little, like a score counter in, right next to each athlete or right in front of each athlete. And every time they did a rep, we hit the little button to increase the score one time. So what happened was, as everyone was watching, you could see the time click down and you could see the scores click up and you could see where everybody was at. And
oh, cool.
To me, like that actually added a certain level of excitement, in my opinion, because you see where everyone's at. You see the time clicking away. You see people looking at each other, trying to, you know, really dig a little bit deeper to get those extra reps, whatever. You see people's, you know, hands getting tired or form starting to break a little bit, and, you know, reps might not count. And to me, that was exciting the way Johnny did that. Like, when he hosted the shootout, it was actually really, he did a great job. It was just right before the pandemic, and it was, we weren't able to get back into it.
Oh, I know exactly what that's like. So many things I had started before the pandemic just kind of went by the wayside. And some of them I just spent years on trying to make them happen, and they were about to happen, and then nope. The universe said no, and now 2 years later, things are starting to happen again, though, so that's a good thing.
At least it's coming back around. That's the important part.
That is the important part. Now, I'm planning on, right now I'm speaking to you. I spoke with Puerco. I'm going to speak with Jonathan, and Rick's going to be back on the show. And after I have those conversations, I'm planning on making it like a once-a-month show about mace training. I invited Perk already to participate. Would you like to participate in that as well?
Absolutely.
We can pick different topics and then discuss them from each other's perspective. You guys can share your wisdom. And since I'll be doing it, I'll be in a better position to apply the wisdom that is shared.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the mace is a wonderful tool because you can get so much strength out of it without, I personally believe what's so great about the mace is that the risk of injury, in my opinion, goes down as long as you're doing it right. Because you're not using a lot of weight. You're using that leverage. But I assure you that when I first started just doing 360s every day, my shoulders and my biceps got jacked all of a sudden. My forearms got bigger, like, and it didn't take long.
And this was, you were doing the two standard steps, the 360 and the, 10-2?
Yeah, I honestly only did the 360 at first. I really wasn't a fan of the 10-2 as much.
Okay.
I just really liked the 360. And then as I started getting more into it, I started learning more about, you know, Viking Ninja. Have you heard about him yet?
Yes, I've heard about him, but I haven't interacted with him yet.
Yeah, Essek is a wonderful guy, really great guy. I started really watching him do his training, and I liked the way he would manipulate the mace and use it as a tool for more than just the 360s and the 10-2s. He used it as a way to strengthen the entire body and built an entire system for the whole body around that. And I really liked that also. Like I said, I enjoyed a lot of this, you know, the manipulations he did to get, you know, just different results, because in my belief in training, there's only a certain amount of moves the human body actually does, right?
Right.
You know, we push, we pull, we hinge, we squat, we gait, we throw, we twist, and that's really about it, right? And so everything else becomes, like, all of our movements are just complex combinations of simple movements, right? And so I like the mace because you can do so, you can get so dynamic and move so many different ways with it. It challenges the body in different ways. But every tool we have, whether you're using a sandbag or, you know, there's a mace, a club belt, a kettlebell, a, you know, a medicine ball, a Bulgarian bag, there's only, you're still doing basic movement. You're
right.
Just changing the tool. You know, a club bell, you know, a club bell shield cast, a mace 360, and a kettlebell halo, and a barbell plate, you know, plate halo. It's all the same exact movement.
Right.
You know, you can sit there and do a outside mill with a kettlebell, with a dumbbell, with a club or a mace, and it's still the same exact movement, right? The Bulgarian bag, pardon?
Because of the way that they're structured, the weight is distributed differently, so it gives you a totally different workout.
Absolutely. But, you know, the movement is still the same. You're just getting different stimuli by changing the tool you're using. You know, the Bulgarian bag is the same exact movement for the spin as the 360 is with a mace. And so it's like, you know, all these things are really fun to play with, and it's the same movement. It's just you adapt it to different tools to get different outcomes.
Think about there. Thank you very much
for
that. And we still have a little bit of time, but not much. I'm interested in your gardening technique. You compared it to a forest in different levels. Can you go over that again? Because I got to tell my wife about this. As soon as we're off the air, she might love to try something like that in our backyard.
Tell her, Google permaculture food forest, and there's a wealth of information out there. But basically what it is, especially for me here in Texas, our summers are so hot, and so it burns. The sun burns everything. That's not the most hardiest of things. And so, since I have two, you know, about 20, 30 foot pecan trees, I plant stuff underneath those. Like, you know, I plant berries, tomatoes, and peppers under those. So when the sun's at its peak, at its hottest, it gets shade. I plant things near each other that work together. So, for example, I will put basil and marigolds near my tomatoes and peppers because the basil helps improve the flavor of the stuff, but also it deters pests because pests do not like these particular plants. So I use a lot of herbaceous plants to help deter pests away from the crops that are more desirable for pests to eat. I will have, hello?
I'm here.
Okay. I will have for example, like a squash running on the ground or a pumpkin or a watermelon, and that will provide ground cover for something that grows more vertically. So that way you're putting more stuff in the space. But basically what it is it's helping plants work together and you fill in more space. So when you're conventional gardening, you take one plant and you give it all this space and you try to get the most out of every one plant, right? But
right.
With permaculture, instead of trying to get 100 pounds of cabbage to this year, what your goal is you put an insane amount of variety. And so you get less of every one thing, but you get more overall because you have so much stuff in there. And then some years, certain plants won't perform as well, whether it's a pest problem or a fungal problem or whether the temperature is just weird and they don't want to do as well. You always have other things because of the mass amount of variety. You have other things that pick up the slack that will give you nutrition still.
Go ahead.
Pardon? Have a conversation on the phone about this, I would love to talk about it for hours because this is something that is truly close to my heart.
Well, we'll give you a segment on the show that we're doing to talk about this. Or we'll do a separate show on permaculture food forests, and so we could talk about that for the whole hour.
That sounds wonderful because I would love it. I think it's going to be important soon in society that everyone should try to grow a little something extra for themselves just to subsidize on whatever capacity they're able to do. I think that's something that would be so great for the world, honestly.
Yeah, I believe it's important too, and I've supported all my town's efforts to do community gardens. They have two of them currently, One of them right next to Coral Hall. So, and I remember in New York City, sometimes if a building would come down, the community, instead of putting up a new building, they would put a community garden there and grow different, you know, food for the residents of the community. And I'd like to see more of that also.
I would too. I think that is, I mean, the less food has to travel, the better it is, and the smaller the carbon footprint is. So if anyone that worries about, you know, the earth and the climate, whatever, regardless what your side on that is, you should just want your food to travel less.
So we will plan a show on permaculture food forest next while I interview the other mace trainers and competitors, because it's a fascinating subject, and you're obviously very adept at the topic. You're very much an expert, so I'd love to do another show on that. We only have a couple of minutes left. How can people contact you?
I'm on Instagram. Right now I'm operating two different accounts. One of them is the_underground_athlete. And that's on Instagram. And the other one is training unconventionally on Instagram.
If you send them to me in a Facebook personal message, I'll put them on the promos for today's show and on your future appearances as well.
Okay, thank you so much. I'll definitely do that.
And any last thoughts you'd like to leave with people listening?
I mean, it's, you know, I think that it's wonderful that, you know, anyone that's just now getting into the mace or trying to, you know, deepen their understanding of the mace, I think it's a wonderful thing to do. I really do love the mace community. You know, for a while when I first got into it, there was a lot of competition about whose style was better. I thought that was kind of silly because everyone's style is, you know, whatever style fits your personality is better. Whatever gets you moving, right? But, you know, I think that, you know, the mace and just training in general is such an important thing. And I'm really grateful you had me on today to talk about this stuff.
And I'm very grateful that you came on and shared all your insights and experience. And I'm very grateful for your introducing me to all the people you've been introducing me to, because so far everybody I've contacted represents a wealth of information and experience. And as someone who's starting something, that's very important to be able to speak with you. And to people listening at home who are curious, it's very important to hear you.
Oh, I really appreciate that. I really hope you do well with this. I like to support other people who are trying to do things.
Thank you. Ditto here. And have a wonderful evening. And I will be contacting you very soon.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you. You have a wonderful weekend.
You too. And thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, whether you called in and are patiently waiting in our queue, or whether you're going to check us out later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. In the minute or so we have left, I'll play Mighty Elohim. In the minute and a half we have left, I'll play Linnell Griffin's Mighty Elohim.
Bye-bye.
Sound the trumpet.